My dear devotees, I'm in full teacher mode today. Hare Krishna, it's very heavy. Full teacher mode today because I have a board. I have a board behind me. I thought to, when you get older, you look back over your life and you look at things that you might have done well. And if there's one... I've done very little well. Maybe a little book distribution. But I was happy with one thing that I did and did, finished, completed. And that was what was known as the Brajamandala Parikrama. In 1988, by the grace of His Holiness Lokanath Maharaj, there was a tour of all of the places where Krishna lived and performed his pastimes. Now, you know how you sometimes get the pastimes jumbled up in your mind, where things happened and when they happened, and how old was Krishna when he was here, and how far is it from there to there? How far did they go herding the cows? That's impossible. You know, your mind does all these little internal loops. So I like history, and I like geography, so I thought today I'd prepare something for you that's a little bit different. And can you turn this down a bit, please? During the singing, I wanted it up, and no one did it. Let's see if it happens. It can't be that the singer has to strain his or her voice when singing. That's it. That's too much. A little more. Not third world dictator, but not mouse in the corner of the pantry. Thank you. You got it. I think you got it just right. Is that right? Yeah. Everybody can hear at the back? Okay. You boy, what's your name? So, let me draw a quick picture of you, of Vrindavan. Now, Sutapa's with us this morning. He loves infographics. You know when you go on the tube, on the underground train in London, when you look at a tube map, that's not actually what the world under the streets of London looks like. It's a symbolic representation where all the distances are, you know, they're sort of shunted in a little bit, just so that you can have it on a map. Well, the extreme example of that is the map that I'm going to draw you of Vrindavan. Okay? Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what I want you to do, I want you to call out if you think you know what I'm drawing. Okay? If you think you know what the numbers are. Who's been to Vrindavan? Who's been to Vrindavan? Okay. So whatever I draw, you're going to think that's fine. Those of you who've not been, you're going to say, what a great devotee this is, a proper disciple. He knows everything. I could draw a map of Tokyo, and you'd be all right, wouldn't you? Okay. So men, can you see the board? Okay. In this preferential, ladies, can you see the board? No need to ask you, because they always turn the board slightly now towards the ladies after 50 years. To ask the men now, can you see?
Yeah.
No, I'm fine, because I won't be able to.
Is that all right?
Can you still see? Okay, good. So first of all, why is it so low down? I expect you to be an acrobat. I'm getting old. Okay, so here we are. Being back good into manner, the pens don't quite work. Multi-million pound project. How much have we raised for the Haveli? Do you think it's possible that we could raise money for pens? So that, you know, maybe we have pens that actually work in the rooms where we give classes. Who's in charge?
Who's in charge?
Make my job so much easier. Double print. So this is fading out towards the bottom. I thought this was a good idea last night. I'm having second thoughts now. Okay. Good. All right. There's a little arrow there. What does that point towards? No, you're all wrong. It does actually. Up here, this points towards Delhi. This points towards Jaipur. This points towards the Agra, Taj Mahal. Okay. very important place of pilgrimage to Taj Mahal. Just kidding. Just kidding. I never went there. I went there once after about 35 years of being a devotee. Once is enough. So here, I'm going to draw a squiggly line. What's that? Huh? You got it. That's the River Yamuna. Okay. It's good. So now let me draw you some numbers. Okay. Number one. What's that? Oh, I got a shot. Clever clocks in the audience today. Okay. Number three. What's that? Good try. Actually, that's Mathura. This is Ravel. This is Lohaban. And then we have it here. Mathura. I told you it was symbolic. Okay. Are you alright so far? Not much of a class, is it? Well, Kripamoy came and there was no Bhagavatam verse, and we really think he's off. He just draws pictures. It's coming. What's this? Anybody know what this is? It's a very interesting one. Oh, very good. That's actually Adibhadri. And this is Kamivan. Very good. Who said Kamivan? Oh, very good. Very good. These two, anybody? Mm-hmm. Huh? Oh, now we bring pen.
Project
Director. Huh? Thank you, Project Director. We're coming to the end now. That is the end, actually. Okay, good. Thank you very much. Have a guess? Okay, good. Take care of that one, please. Good. Okay. All right, thank you very much. So, that's all right, isn't it? Round of applause, please. Thank you. Not bad. So, I'm sorry, Maharaj. We're very motivated here. We don't draw pictures without either wages or applause here at Bhaktivedanta Manor. What we call Vrindavan is actually a very large space. Can you see number 11 there? And can you see number 5? Between number 5 and number 11 is 29 miles. 29 miles. If you go ziggy-zaggy all the way around, it is 128 miles. That's Braj Mandal Parikrama. If you do it properly, it's barefoot. You do it barefoot. And you visit all the predominant places where Krishna actually performed his pastimes. So in the whole area within that circle, there are 12 great forests. 12 great forests. Unfortunately, with tree cutting being very enthusiastic in Kali Yuga, you would be hard-pressed to find them. To find the forests of Vrindavan, you generally speaking have to sort of, you know where they are. Kamyavan, number 9 and number 8. What is this? Number 9. Kamyavan still has a forest. Very nice place. So if you know the names of the forests of Vrindavan, it is said that you make spiritual advancement. So I'm going to ask you to call out very loudly the names of the forests of Vrindavan. Is that all right? And see who gets the loudest, because then you'll get lots of spiritual advancement. Madhuvan.
Madhuvan.
See, everything is a van. This van is forest. Forest of honey.
Talavan.
Kumudvan.
Bahulavan.
Sometimes people say van, sometimes they say ban, and sometimes if they're Gujarati they say wan. Madhuvan. You see, take your pick. It's a very scientific language. It's free flow with the V's. Kamyavan. Kadirvan. Vrindavan. Bhadravan. Bandirvan. Belavan. Lohavan. Mahavan. Thank you. Gosh, you're in full religious cult mode this morning, aren't you? It's very good. So we also have 24 upavans. Upavan means a grove. We have kunds. Kund is a lake. And a sarovara. Sarovara is also a lake. A kund is a pond. And ghats, or riverbanks. Now, Lord Chaitanya sent the six Goswamis to Vrindavan to locate all the lost holy places. That they had to do by talking to locals. So it was still many, many hundreds, several thousand years later. You know what happens when you have a holy place? As long as the religion has some vitality, people will go there. But when the religion no longer has any vitality, people stop going to the holy places. It's like a seaside resort in this country. 50 years ago, if I said the word Blackpool, everybody would say, oh yeah, that's where everybody goes to the seaside. No, not anymore. You see, but now if I say Mallorca, oh yeah, yeah, I've been to Ibiza, oh yeah. Nobody knew where Ibiza was many years ago. Now everybody knows. Stag do in Ibiza, okay? So things have currency and then they lose currency. Thank you, it's a rather nice ringtone you've got there. So all these holy places were only remaining holy if the Krishna consciousness movement, as it was in those days, was still prominent. There was a Krishna consciousness movement. We sometimes don't like to think it, but there was. And it was very prominent in Tamil Nadu. Then it moved to Jagannath Puri, and it moved up to Bengal, moved to the Vrindavan area. So these things have their origins. There was a poet named Vedanta Deshika who wrote the Gopal Vimshati. Another alwar known as Andal wrote the Tirupavai. And so it was there in the 700s. But it didn't go away, and you'll still go to temples today, and it's dedicated to Krishna. It's not that only certain temples are dedicated to Krishna, and everybody who serves Vishnu doesn't like Krishna. No, everybody likes Krishna. Everybody. Nowhere in India will you find people who don't like Krishna. And everywhere in India you'll find people who understand that Krishna is God. It's just some small details, that's all. So everybody knows the name of Gopal. So even people from the south would go on pilgrimage to Vrindavan. So it was there, but it was just not so prominent. So he sent his followers, Lord Chaitanya sent his followers there. So they discovered these places. And who was also there? Was it Lokanath? Lokanath Das Goswami had already been sent early, even before then. And this is one of the big aims of ISKCON, is to resurrect a place of transcendental pastimes, so that when people go to that place, they can remember the pastimes of Krishna. Because this ultimately is the ultimate goal that only comes to us after anartana vritti and nishta and ruchi and asakti and bhava. Then Krishna begins to reveal his pastimes to you. Some of those will become prominent, and from that you'll discover your relationship with Krishna. So what better time, when we don't have any of these things — I'm making a presumption here — but we need to move on in our remembrance of Krishna, because the Nam, Rupa, Guna, and Leela of Krishna are those things that we should be chanting, singing, talking about constantly, because that's where we're headed. If you're not interested now, apratipati, apratipati, easily interested in something else, or disinterest, isn't it? Vikshepa, distraction, laya, sleep, raga, dvesha, hates, anxieties, fears, things that you're more interested in. All these things are five persistent obstacles for the soul on its path back to Godhead. So in order to remove those obstacles, the medicine is the same as the ultimate goal, is bhakti. So bhakti begins with shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam. So we talk about Krishna's pastimes. Why? Because it's purifying. Why? Because we want ultimately to be remembering Krishna's pastimes. Why? Because ultimately we want to be in Krishna's pastimes. That's the whole point. So that map is not only a map for today, some academic subject, but it's also a map of where we shall ultimately be spending quite a bit of time. So I always wondered, I must make a confession here, I always wondered, where did Nandagram fit in? I was never quite clear where Nandagram fitted in. Does anybody know where Nandagram fits in to Krishna's pastimes? Nandagram is, where do we have it? Number 11. It's sort of 12 o'clock up there, right at the top. It's a big hill, and Nandagram. So anyway, from Krishna's birth, he was born in Mathura, and then he moved to, go to the back of the class. He was born in Mathura and immediately taken to Gokula. And Gokula, of course, because Nanda Maharaj was living there. And Nanda Maharaj and his cowherd community were living there. And they had lived there for some time. And originally, Nanda Maharaj was from Nandagram. His forefathers, not him, but his forefathers had originally been there. Now, for us, when we look at it and we think, well, it's only a taxi ride away. You could do it by rickshaw if you want. But if you do it on a bullock cart, you would know about it. So these are different areas that they moved to where the grass was sweet. So they used to live in Nandagram, and the forefathers, the grandfathers, and they moved to Gokul. But anyway, Krishna went from Mathura to Gokula. How long did that take? It's sort of an hour, isn't it? Something like that. You cross the river. Vasudev, his father, had to cross the raging river in the storm. So then Gokula is, where are we? Gokula, let me see where I put it. Did I put it at number 4? So Gokula is across the river at number 4. Can you see it? Everybody can see it. And then Mathura is number 5. So we walk from 5 to 4. All right? It's a little bit shorter than that, actually. You can see it from the other side. Now, Krishna stays there for 3 years and 6 months. Please correct me if I've got anything wrong, but this is my research. 3 years and 6 months, Krishna stays there. And 3 years and 6 months, Krishna manages to dispatch, in this order, this sequence. Who's the first demon that comes to get Krishna? Putana, yeah, the first one, Putana. And she comes as a lady who is very much trusted because of her beauty. She has poison on her breast, she feeds the child, and she is vanquished. So that's the first one. Trinavarta, what's his speciality? Huh? He is the? She's making this with a thing. Yes, he's a, that's it called. Well, we don't see them here in England because our weather system is very sedate, very British. Whirlwind, yes, whirlwind. Shakatasura, the cart demon. Now, I always thought, out of all the demons that Krishna vanquishes, the cart demon is not kind of, it's a bit sort of, you know, I mean, the whirlwind demon, that's something. Putana, 12 miles long, breast poisoned, that's kind of exciting. But the cart demon, I always thought, why do we bother talking about that one? It's like a bit hum-ho, isn't it? You know, Shakatasura. Yeah, okay. Move on. Next. But actually, it is remarkable because Krishna was a baby. That's the remarkable thing. Because Krishna was a baby. And with just his foot, the cart broke and the demon in the cart was vanquished. That's why it's important. Now, to those of us who already believe that Krishna can do anything, it's fine. It's inconsequential. But if you don't know who Krishna is, and then you hear that a baby kicked a cart and with his foot vanquished a demon and the cart was upset, that's quite spectacular, isn't it? It's quite, you're meant to be impressed, actually. next we have the phenomenon of the dirt in the mouth. What happened there? What happened with the dirt in the mouth? Kids, Mom, he put dirt in his mouth. Shh, don't tell tales. No, I saw him do it. He put dirt in his mouth. They're talking to each other. So what happened when Krishna put dirt in his mouth? Or Balaram said that he did. Is it open your mouth? She saw the entire universe. Saw the entire universe there. And then she saw herself with Krishna. And this is very spectacular. But because this disturbed the relationship, and she had to think of herself as mother to Krishna, immediately she was then covered over by Yoga Maya. So then we have the next one, which we will be singing about through the latter part of this month, or next month. And that is the grinding mortar. Krishna tied as a baby to a grinding mortar. So this happened when he was about 3 years and 6 months old. Am I right? Am I right, Maharaj?
6 months and 2 or 3 months.
2 or 3 months.
Jarmashtami, birth, puja, and then coming karti up. 2 months, 2 and 3 months.
2 or 3 months.
Binding happened karti, month of karti, and birth was in this time.
Yes, yes. Yes, of course it doesn't say which Kartik. It doesn't say which October. But I'll go with you there. I'll respect my elders. So then we get this beautiful pastime of the mortar being pulled by Krishna in between the two trees. And these two trees, known as Yamal Arjun trees. I also didn't know what these trees were. I'd never seen a Yamal. Anybody seen a Yamal Arjun tree? So when I went to Mauritius, the Hindu people who'd gone to Mauritius about 150 years ago, they planted an avenue of these trees. Now, these trees are the only trees that survive a hurricane because they come down like this, normal, normal, normal tree, normal tree, normal tree, and they get to the bottom and then they flare out like a rocket. Or like we used to draw rockets when we were kids, you know, like this, and then something like that, fins at the bottom. So you cannot push this tree over. So it is very consequential that Krishna, as a baby, was able to pull these trees over, you see. And so the trees fell over, and then Maharaj said, well, you know, it looks like this place is a little bit dangerous. There's strange things happening here. Maybe we should move. So then, just before they moved, there was an incident at the gate. What happened at the gate? If there was a gate. I'm imagining a picket fence, but I don't think a picket fence was the profession. What happened? Somebody came to the gate. Huh? Lord Shiva, he came later on at number 11 there. He came to Nandagram. Huh? Thank you, Govinda. The fruit vendor, she came to the gate and Krishna came forward with what?
Grains.
He came forward with some grains. And the fruit vendor looked in her basket and there was gold and jewels because she'd reciprocated with Krishna. So thereby indicating to all of us who do bhakti that, you know, interestingly, that you can come with love and you can give Krishna just a little something and Krishna will respond in a very magnified way. And as Prabhupada always said, you take one step towards Krishna, Krishna takes 10 steps towards you. So then the family go to Vrindavan. Where is Vrindavan? Huh? Number one. All right, they go from Gokul, number 4, up the river to Vrindavan and across the river. So maybe the bad stuff won't happen while we're here. So then we have, unfortunately, we have even more demons come. We have in this place, Krishna stays from 3 years and 6 months until 6 years and 8 months. And this is really where we concentrate our attention. And it's where if we come to the altar and we see Krishna playing his flute, we'll see that's the Krishna that we focus on in bhakti yoga. Why? Because that has been that stage of Krishna's life has been indicated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the most attractive. This Vrindavan Krishna is the most attractive in this youthful, not even youthful period, but this childhood period. So then comes Vatsasura, the cow demon, Bakasura, the duck demon, Aghasura. Now, it's interesting, when you walk around Vrindavan, still today, if you've got the time to do it, I suggest that everybody does it. I'm making a plug for the Braj Mandal Parikram. Do it when you're young, because let me tell you, you will never do it when you're old. Do it when you're young. If you can do it barefoot, great. It says, one who completes the Braj Mandal Parikrama, the cycle of Braj Mandal, he or she will never have to go into the cycle of birth and death again. Now that's a good benediction. So you'll see all of the places of Krishna's pastimes. The first couple of weeks are difficult. The first week is insanely difficult. You will wish that you didn't have feet on the end of your legs. But on the third week, you'll be walking like a native. And by the fourth week, you'll be running across bare ground. Absolutely guaranteed. So then, they say a speaker should never speak about something that he forgot to bring with him. But I'm going to speak about it anyway. Because I knew Sutapa might be here. Sutapa, did you know that there used to be a Bhaktivedanta Book Trust division right here? Did you know that? We had an English BBT. And you didn't have to write to Sweden to ask them if they would kindly print something. Did you know that? We printed what we wanted. Isn't that nice? We should do that. Do you know anybody who's involved with the BBT? Maybe. What's his name? Jai Swami. What's his name? So, of course, as you know, in 1977, Srila Prabhupada passed away. And right up to the time of his passing, he was in Vrindavan meditating on Krishna and translating the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the last chapter that we have, printed at least, is chapter 13 of the 10th canto. And this concerns the stealing of the cows and calves by Lord Brahma. And devotees here in England, we thought, wouldn't it be nice if we printed this for Srila Prabhupada? Now, it really, really doesn't make sense that you print a book, and when you open the cover of the book, it says chapter 13. But that's what we did, because we were fanatically dedicated to his divine grace, and we wanted something to remember him by. And it was going to be a great marathon if we could distribute these books. So in 1980, we printed 125,000. 125,000 of these books. A book which really made no sense. You open the cover and it says, chapter 13. Where's the other 12 chapters? Well, you have to buy, you know, the 10-volume set, as it was in those days. Prabhupada translated the Krishna book, of course. There's chapter 13. So there you have it. It's the last thing that Prabhupada... have you seen them? It's a slim volume, blue in color. And it's like a full Bhagavatam, only it's just a very thin one. I'll give you one. It's like that. So we distributed 125,000. 125,000. It was a good marathon. People all over the country. Huh? Lord Brahma stole some cows. You remember it? Have you got one? One of those books? Yeah, you should hold on to it. So it's somewhere in England there are 125,000. America printed 20,000. We printed 125,000. Some reason we were very enthusiastic. Ramana Shringa, you must have done a few of those yourself. So it was a Srila Prabhupada marathon, and we were the custodians of the very last thing Prabhupada dictated on earth, this yatra. So 125,000 books went out. And so our meditation for the whole Christmas marathon was Lord Brahma stealing the cows and the calves and the boys, because this is what happened in 13th chapter of the 10th canto. So this happened. There's one demon that comes just before Lord Brahma steals the cows and the boys. What is it? One demon who came. Huh? But you know all these things. Let's stretch someone else's imagination. Who is it? Agasura. Agasura, yes, Agasura came. And Krishna and his followers entered in. So then, immediately after this, the boys, they lost a complete year of their lives. And they didn't speak about Agasura until 1 year later. And of course, this is like, how is it possible? Prakshit asked the question, how is it possible that the boys had this encounter with such a ferocious, dinosaur-like demon, but they didn't speak about it? Ah, well, they'd been stolen, you see. They were in a cave for an entire year. Meanwhile, Krishna manifests as the boys and the calves. And there's an unusual affection that takes place between the parents, because the boy that they thought was their son was none other than Krishna. So parents are always affectionate towards their children, okay, when they haven't seen them. My own son came back last night. If you're listening, I hope you're listening. Get up. He came back last night, and he'd been for 6 weeks on the ISKCON Youth European Bus Tour. So after 6 weeks, so his mother and his sister were up waiting for him. But I was fast asleep. I had to come here this morning. So great deal of affection between mothers and sons. But when the son looks like your son, but he's actually Krishna, then how much more affection will there be? So all these mothers and fathers, they just really, I feel such love for my children. How is it possible? And I feel such a love. Every time I see that cow, I just want to cry. The little calf is beautiful. So they had a whole year of this because Krishna had manifested himself. And then, of course, Lord Brahma comes. And the reason I like this, of course, is because Krishna manifests himself as Narayan. And it's one of the places in the Srimad Bhagavatam where we actually get to see Krishna is not a manifestation of Narayan, but he's a manifestor of Narayan, because he sits there, little cowherd boy, and then boom, 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 boom. They all become manifest. And Lord Brahma goes, Hari Om, and he looks around, and he sees, you mean you and them are the same, and they're from you, and you did all this? And then he, of course, chapter 14 of the 10th canto is Lord Brahma making his prayers. I'm so sorry. How many times do we see this in Krishna's pastimes? Someone behaves disrespectfully towards Krishna, someone who should know better, and then they come in front of Krishna. But it's just so that these prayers, these requests for forgiveness can be spoken. Because these are some of the most beautiful sections of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because this is on the path of Sharanagati, the path of adjustment towards Krishna being the Supreme Person. This is the point of change. It's like these curtains open. And when the curtains open, the state in the room changes, because everybody looks that way and they think, ah, beautiful Krishna. So when the curtains part from your eyes and you actually understand, yes, Krishna is the supreme. And really it's up to me to reorientate my life towards Krishna, rather than assuming that Krishna is going to change everything in my life. You know, I have to change my life to get my life ready to surrender to Krishna. Not, I'm not waiting for Krishna to just prove yourself, prove that you exist. This is basically what we're doing, isn't it? This is basically what we're doing. When we come to Krishna consciousness, it all sounds very nice. Okay, you are here for a few weeks or a few months. It all sounds very nice, but I'm waiting to be zapped. I'm waiting to be sapped. Okay, you're God, you're Krishna. I've chanted 9,462 beads. Come on, show yourself, give me something. You know, I got up at 4 o'clock for the past 3 days. Give me something, zap me. Okay. It's a trade-off. It's a business partnership that we're trying to make with Krishna. So Krishna doesn't respond very well to that. He will respond. He's responsive to everything that you try to do. Prabhupada, right here in this room, sitting over there, he said, if you come into the temple and you turn one screw in the wall, and he pointed towards the altar, he said, Radharani will turn to Krishna and say, my dear Lord, look at this great devotee. Please give him your blessings. He said that right here in this room. So Krishna does reciprocate. He's very eager to reciprocate. Krishna sometimes doesn't even have to have much of an excuse. In fact, all of our Sharanagati procedure is really just seen as it's just an excuse. What's the word, excuse? I lost it now. Anyway, it's an excuse for Krishna to reciprocate with us, you see. So Krishna wants to. But how much more he will reciprocate if you surrender? Oh, what does that mean? I got up at 4 o'clock. I chanted 9,642 beads. What more can I do? I've done everything I can. I've been on the Bhakti program now for 3 months. I went on the sabbatical. I went all the way to India. Zap me. You know? Well, I'll tell you what. How about you stop asking for something for Krishna? How about you go to Krishna and you just say, look, here's the deal. I don't know when, I don't know where anything's going to come from you, but I surrender to you today. I give up this ambition to have you prove yourself to me, and I just accept you for who you are. You're the great mystery of my life and the great mystery of the lives of millions of people. And I'm content for you to remain mysterious. I can read about you, I can serve you, but I'm content for you to remain mysterious. It's when you say that to Krishna that Krishna says, all right, you've got it. You've got it. Here I am. Zap. Wow. What an amazing kirtan. Wow. Tears running down the cheeks. Wow. And then immediately you think to yourself, I did that. That was me. I did that. I got up at 4 o'clock and I chanted 9,642 rounds. I made, by my bhakti yoga prowess, I made Krishna matter. No, you got the wrong idea. Completely the wrong idea. But I've been in ISKCON for 9 years. You owe me. No, it doesn't work like that. Surrender is a constant daily activity. Will you give yourself over to someone who may or may not reveal himself to you? That's the great thing. But if you can not be motivated by some sense that I did this and I need a reward, and basically you have to prove that you're there. Otherwise, that I'm not picking up that bead bag anymore. You have to prove yourself to me. I've done enough for you, Krishna. You have to reveal yourself to me. Otherwise, see that bead bag over there? I'm not picking it up. You cannot even chant with that attitude. The bead bag will weigh 10 tons. Oh, I can't manage this. The Bhagavatam, it'll be like opening, you know, the Bank of England. I can't. We can make it as easy as we can for you. But don't think that just because Sutapa Prabhu has now done a very nice book about the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is all pictures and diagrams, that he makes it easy for you. Don't please don't think that, don't think of yourself as being someone who needs to be spoon-fed. You know, the essence lies in the difficulty. Anyway, these were some of my prayers as 31 years ago, or thereabouts. I was walking around Vrindavan. I was very furtive, very furtive. I was thinking, I'm doing this. My feet hurt. Krishna, you should make it easy for me. And now I've had no breakfast. And I was thinking, this is not fair. I'm doing this for you, my Lord. And a little voice inside me said, I don't think so. I think you're doing it for yourself, really. All right, okay, I surrender. And then someone just walked up to me and he said, Prabhuji, you just have to surrender. And I said, what does that mean? What does that even mean? He said, you have to ask Krishna to help you. You have to ask Krishna to help you. And so, without any expectation of reward. And then there was a little something that clicked in my mind or my heart. And I got my breakfast. Krishna revealed himself very nicely. As when Krishna reveals himself as breakfast, you know you're onto a good thing. So here's Krishna in Vrindavan. So then, at 6 years and 8 months, they all went to number 11 up the top there, which is Nandagram. Nandagram. Now, Nandagram is a big hill. Anybody been there? Unfortunately, sometimes in these holy places, the holier it is, the greater the strength of the mahants who live there. And sometimes you basically have to fight your way through to get to the places just to see something, don't you? But from Nandagram, the boys would basically fan out across the whole circle, pretty much all of that, where you see the different numbers there. And they would take the cows to a different forest, sometimes different forest every week. Now, Narayan Bhattacharya, who wrote the original pilgrimage guide, he said, actually, Krishna was fighting with demons every morning. Then he would have lunch. There was a demon before lunch every day. So it is impossible to count the number of demons that Krishna vanquished. So all this time, Kamsa's becoming more and more strained that never seemed to get any success with this young boy. So in this we have Denukasura, then we have Kaliya. Now Kaliya, if you know, is right down in Panchakroshi Vrindavan at number 5. So Krishna here, from Nandagram at 11 to number 1 there. So Krishna's coming all this way to herd the cows, a lot of cows. And he starts that when he's 6 years old with the calves and cows. And that's when we begin finding the, extreme demons, the very adventurous demons, the ones that tried to kill Krishna when he was away from home. And that's why the gopis would always give Krishna prayers for protection, because they'd come back with these stories. Imagine if your own child came back and said, well, we wrestled with a poisonous snake. Today we almost got run over by this giant bird trying to eat me. Your parents would go, well, I'm not going to let you out with the cows. But the cows had to go out. Somehow or another, something was protecting Krishna. So there was also a forest fire. When you have a forest, there's also forest fire. Unfortunately, at the moment, a huge, huge forest fire is burning the Amazon right now as we speak. It's unstoppable fire. Amazing, isn't it? Amazing. There may be, for your children's children, some very, very dire consequences. So the lungs of the planet, it's Kali Yuga, my friends, Kali Yuga. But Krishna, as he was in those days, he was the destroyer of the forest fire. One he put out, and one he ate. And both of these happened we have one fire happened in Bandiravan. Bandiravan, number 14. And another happened in another place. So then we have Pralambasura. Pralambasura, which is also number 14. And then we have the calf demon in number 13. We have the gopis attracted by the flute, which I was going to read, but the beautiful. How many of you have heard of the recording of the Krishna stories, the gopis attracted by the flute, made in Los Angeles? You heard of it? Gopis attracted by the flute. What they did, they had a recording studio, and they put some the Krishna stories to music. Rather like our Paravita did, but with very good actors' voices. It was done in Los Angeles by the Golden Avatar recording studio. Please try and find them. And there's one called The Gopis Attracted by the Flute. And you will just... It was the... It kept me going when I was young. Let's just say, the devotee, we'd been on the street in the rain, you know, for the past 3 days. We were cold. The results weren't very good, but we'd put on that tape, as it was in those days, put on the tape, and suddenly the world seemed all right, because there's a beautiful flute and Krishna and the gopis explaining what it means to be attracted by Krishna's flute playing. Sometimes we don't meditate on this sufficiently. We see Krishna playing the flute, but we never hear the flute. The idea is that, you know, we should hear that flute ourselves. That would be very attractive to us. So Prabhupada said at one stage, he said, at one point in your life you will hear Krishna's flute. He said, you will turn around and there you will see Krishna face to face. He said, just carry on with this business of Krishna consciousness. He said, you will see Krishna in this lifetime. So then, stealing the garments of the gopis, that happened at Shirghat, which is number 12. You see number 12 over there? That's where Krishna stole the clothes of the gopis. Krishna stole the clothes of the gopis because they were meditating on asking Durga or Katyayani to give them a beautiful, a very qualified husband. And they all wanted to marry Krishna. So Krishna fulfilled their desires. So then, you see number 7, Govardhan Hill. Krishna would often go to Govardhan Hill. But you see, it's quite a long way from Nandagram. But also, so we have at the top of Govardhan Hill, we have the R, that's Radhakund. Next to it, Shamakund. And then K is Kusum Sarovar. And A is the first village as you're walking around Govardhan Hill. It's called Anior. Anior says, give us more, give us more. It's where the cowherd boys asked, Krishna as he was. And then Panchari is P. And the cowherd boys had brought some yogurt. And Krishna wanted some. You know, Krishna always wants what's in someone else's lunch pack. Never content with what Mother Yashoda gave him. He always wants what's in someone else. That's an opportunity for them to share their meal with him. So P is Panchari. And there, still today, you will find trees that have leaves shaped like cups. So using those leaves, the cup-shaped leaves, Krishna got some yogurt. You still go and find that today. Okay. So then I shall bring things to a close. I could speak. So then Krishna left Govardhan Hill. Where did the Rasa Leela take place? Well, as you're going around the Brajamandala Parikrama, we find at least 6 places where there's what is known as Rasa Stalis. Now, We don't know which ones are authorized. I still don't know which ones are authorized and which ones not, but we'll find Krishna danced here. You'll find different places. Certainly he danced over on that side. Certainly at Vamsivat, we know, which is in the Vrindavan town, Panchakoshi Vrindavan. So then killing the Keshi demon, Vyomasura, all happened there. Aristasura, of course. Then 10 years and 7 months. At 10 years and 7 months, Krishna is taken by Akrura. And this journey is the name of Akrura means, Akrura means cruel. Akrura means not cruel. So the gopis are telling Akrura, your name is Akrura, but you're Krura because you're taking our Krishna away from us. And there's that famous scene. If you've ever been to the temple president's office up there, you'll see a beautiful painting of Krishna and Balaram being taken on a chariot by Akrura, and the gopis just, they're running after, and Radharani is almost fainting like this, and they're getting ready to assume their last position, which is just staring at Krishna as he goes into the distance. Now, they were not to know at this time, as Krishna said, yes, yes, of course we'll come back. We're just going to Mathura. We're doing this wrestling match that Kamsa has, but we don't know whether you'll come back. There was great anxiety. Krishna said, well, of course I'll come back. I'm always successful. You know, these are just wrestlers. They're not huge snakes. They're not huge birds. They're not whirlwinds. When have I ever been unsuccessful? So we'll go there and we'll come back. Unfortunately, the gopis were very disappointed because Krishna, of course, he never returned. So he went to Mathura, which is really only 8 miles away. You'd think, why didn't they all just, you know, walk the 8 miles? They've been walking all over the place. Why didn't they walk? Because they were restricted by their social position. They were young girls. They couldn't just walk to the big city. And so Krishna goes, and Kuvalyapida, big elephant, Chanura and Mushtika, big wrestlers, and finally Kamsa. Kamsa is vanquished. Now Mathura was already a big place. It was a very important city. It's a very important city because a lot had happened there. 7 great sages meditated there. Dhruva Maharaj went into the forest just outside the city of Mathura in a place called Madhuban. And different things happened. Different things happened in Mathura. So Mathura was already a great city. Even after Krishna's time, it went on to become a great Buddhist city, and then, of course, a great Mughal city. And we see that Krishna's birthplace is now very much guarded, the Krishna Janmasthan now. So the journey from Vrindavan to Mathura is marked by, you know, midday came and they wanted to have a bath to, you know, take their bath. In this part of the world, it gets very hot in the middle of the day, so it's quite common for people to, if they see a river, you just go into a river, take a nice cold bath, and you feel refreshed. So then in the bath, as he was taking bath, the Akrura saw that the 2 boys on his chariot, they were there. They were actually Vishnu and Ananta Shesha, the serpent bed of Narayan. And then he became very confused as to who it was actually on his chariot. And so again we have this revelation that Krishna is the origin of the Lord Narayan. And of course he goes into Kamsa. And Kamsa by this time is panic-stricken. He's basically panic-stricken. He's paranoid, we would say today. Paranoid. He's looking in mirrors and he's not seeing his face. He's seeing that his shadow has holes in it. How can a shadow have holes in it? But he's really, really worried that Krishna is going to... And eventually, of course, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And eventually Krishna vanquishes. And then I have Uddhava going back and delivering a letter from Krishna, or delivering a message from Krishna to the gopis. And that's where we see Radharani And that is somewhere, where did that take place? That is somewhere up in the north anyway. But I've been to the spot, and we've in that very spot we've read out the Radharani talking to the bumblebee. So it's a beautiful spot, so we read that pastime. And she's cursing the bumblebee, who in her transcendental madness, she says, is a black bee. He says, oh, you have come from Mathura. You don't really care about us now, us village folk. You've come, I can see some pollen on your whiskers. This must be some kumkum from the sophisticated ladies in Mathura. And the Krishna is more interested in them than he is in us. He's not coming back, is he? Anyway, I'm not interested. Whatever you're going to be is buzzing around. She said, no, don't try and talk to me. I'm not interested. And the bee went around her feet and he said, no, you may try and, no, don't pay your respects by going to my feet. He said, I'm not interested. So this was the response. Only Krishna. She's only thinking of Krishna at every moment. So then Krishna lives in Mathura, and in number two is a very interesting place. We don't talk about it very much. This is called Lohaban. Lohaban. And this Lohaban is where, of course, there was great fighting. It is said that Jarasandha and his armies, who is it? Jarasandha and Kaliyavana. Jarasandha and Kaliyavana, they came to Mathura, and their armies were like waves. It was like the ocean coming in. Who would stand when the ocean was coming in and try and fight the ocean? Can you fight the ocean? The waves are crashing on the shore, no. But Krishna stood there and he fought 17 times. Eventually, Krishna did something that was very remarkable. He ran away from the battle. The one and only time when Krishna ran away from the battle, and therefore at that pastime he's known as Krishna the Rancho. The Rancho, Krishna the coward. How can you say Krishna's a coward? How can you say Krishna's a coward? But Krishna ran away from the battlefield, not because he was fearful, but because he went to a cave, and in that cave was residing Muchukunda. And Muchukunda took care of Kaliyavana. He said, who has woke me up? And with his eyes, he burned Kaliyavana. Okay. So this is how Krishna... And then eventually, Jarasandha, he kind of licked his wounds and went and came back another day. And eventually he was fighting with Bhima. He was vanquished. So then I have Krishna living in Mathura until 28. That may be a bit... I'm looking for some support here. Maharaj is giving me that Muchukunda-like stare. It's going to burn me up on the seat here. And then, of course, in Dwaraka, Krishna lives for a very long time. He doesn't see the gopis again until he's after 90. At the time of Kurukshetra, coming back for the eclipse, he's around 90. But Prabhupada said, he still looks like a young boy. Now, one time they were in, where is it? Chennai. Parthasarathi in Chennai. And he has a mustache. The deity of Krishna has a mustache. And they went to Prabhupada and they said, Prabhupada, when Krishna's older, when he comes from Dwarka, does he have a mustache? Prabhupada said, no. He never has a mustache. He said, he said, peach fuzz. He said, it is like the skin of a peach. He said, Krishna is eternally youthful. Navayovanam. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you very much for this ramble through the bramble of Vrindavan. Hare Krishna.